Hello and welcome to Kayak Fishing Weekly. We're the show on the Sirius Angler Podcast Network that's dedicated to all things kayak fishing. I'm your host, Justin Larson. Thanks for tuning in. Got a fun show planned for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming Bassmaster Kayak Series Championship. We'll also do a little recap on the Hobie BOS that happened here this past weekend. Hobie BOS on Lake Logan Martin. Talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit of springtime fishing and also a little bit about a new kayak trail that's out there. You may have already heard about it, but I'm going to be joined tonight by an angler who's a former tournament director. He's going to be stepping into that role again, picking up that hat as a director. But most of you probably know him as one of the top competitive kayak anglers out there. Winner of the 2021 Hobie BOS Angler of the Year, also the 2022 Bassmaster Kayak Series Angler of the Year. He's a three-time Bassmaster winner, a multiple-time KBF and Hobie winner, none other than Mr. Drew Gregory. Here he is, Mr. Drew Gregory. Drew, thanks for joining us.
Hey, man, I'm glad to be here, and I'm excited. You know, this is my first time on the KFW show, I believe. So I'm excited, man. It's a cool thing you guys got going, and I'm glad you are part of it, man. Bailey asked me one time, like, what he thought about you, and I was like, dude, Justin would be perfect. I hope it works out, and you guys can make it happen. And it's been a really cool show. People are talking about it, so pump, man. Let's do it.
Well, I appreciate it. So I want to talk a little bit. We were talking offline. Mm-hmm. First thing I want to touch on is the Hobie BOS tournament. I was working, obviously I would have loved to be there. I'm sure you would have loved to compete also.
Yeah.
But it was an impressive show. And I know the lake, it's got a lot of fish from stuff that I looked at in the past. You know, 85 inches is a pretty good day down there and has won tournaments before. But got to give a shout out to Abby. I know I'm going to butcher his last name. Is it Abundanza?
Yeah. Abby Abundanza. You got it.
All right.
Yeah, awesome. Man. Fellow Z-Man pro with me.
That reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, Abby absolutely crushed it. 185 and a half inches. Kind of ran away with it a little bit that second day.
He did, man. He did. He ran away with it, and I was excited to see him. I didn't get a chance to hear kind of how it all went down, but I texted him and was so happy to see. He's been, grinding for a while and had a lot of good tournaments, good finishes. You know, a little up and down sometimes, but a lot of really good finishes. So, he was close. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, he got it. And I was so, so pumped to see him take that win. And I really wanted to be there. Like you said, Logan Martin was where the original Bassmaster tournament was. Were you in that one? The original Bassmaster Kayak Series?
That was 2020 or 2021? I think it was 2020, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, I think
my first tournament was 2021 down mm-hmm. at Fort. With Bass. So I know they were there. I know it existed for at least 1 year prior to that. It could have been more. I don't know.
And I'm starting to kind of forget, and somebody will probably correct me, but if I remember correctly, I thought that very first one was also held in conjunction with the Classic. Like, you know what I mean? How right now you got a regular season and there's like an event or two, and then we have maybe there's only one. So right this year's, I don't know if there was one or until the championship or two. I think it was just one Bassmaster Kayak because they had Murray. And then the championship Murray. That's right. So that one, I believe, was the very first one. I think it was held in conjunction with the Classic, and I can't remember where they had that Classic. I could be wrong, but anyway, it was maybe I am wrong. I don't know, but it was like 250 people were in it. It was awesome. I think I was like 15th or 16th or something. So it was pretty good. So I like that fishery. I like it a lot. I love the Alabama bass, one of my favorite fish that people still call spotted bass, and it frustrates the heck out of me. As many podcasts as I do talking about it. But anyway, happy for Abby, and good event for sure. Was it Alabama bass he was catching? I think it was, wasn't it? Mostly on his stringer.
I'm not sure. I caught some of the KBN podcast. I was trying to hear a little bit of it. And I heard kind of what he was doing technique wise, but I did not
look it up.
Pick up on whether it was spots or not. Or excuse me, Alabama bass.
Yeah, right. There we go. it's hard. I get it.
And I wanted to also shout out second place, Joe McElroy, 175 and a half inches. Great finish for him. And then Paul Averill, hopefully I'm saying that right, 175 inches also. Another great showing. And I'm not 100% sure with the rule if all three of those guys punch their ticket. I know it used to be top three punch a ticket to the TOC. I think now it's if it's fewer than 100, then then only two. But I'm not 100% sure. So I know Abby and Joe are going to TOC. Right. Paul may have a little bit of work still cut out for him to make it. But even if he's not auto qualifying, he's put himself in a really good position.
Spot. Yeah.
Just needs, you know, two decent, you know, kind of average finishes, and he's there.
Looks like Abby's got a mixed bag on day one, by the way.
Okay.
I don't know about day two. Looks like more largemouth, but man, he crushed it. So did he say, if you listened to enough of that to hear how he was catching them by chance?
He was talking about chatterbait. I think he caught he mentioned a few on a shaky head, but I think the bulk of what he was doing was skipping a chatterbait up under docks.
Yeah.
Which, fun way to do it. That bait wins so many tournaments.
It does, man, for sure. It's a good springtime bait. Now, did you know that Abby is also a country music artist? Are you aware of that or no?
I'd heard him play. I didn't know he was that was the first time I think it was ICAST last year. I heard him play, and I wasn't sure if he, you know, I guess how that came about. But I recognize that dude over there.
He plays, like, he does a lot of solo gigs these days, and I believe he still plays with his band. But he was the lead singer, and they hit they had a few like top charts of the Billboard, like top 20 hits, you know, so it was pretty cool.
Wow.
But and now he does a little bit more solo stuff. So he actually kind of, you know, we all make ends meet, you know, aside from our tournament fishing, right?
Oh, yeah.
And a little bit of sponsorships, whatever we can get on that side. He makes ends meet, like we all have to have something else, by playing shows, and he'll schedule shows around like close to part of the country where his tournaments are. So he kind of goes a little early or after and has a gig. So it kind of, he tries to get that working. It's pretty cool. But, and he's actually playing at the Kayak Adventure Series, Sholi Palooza, the first one. He's going to be playing at our after party there. So that'll be pretty cool to hear him there. And Jody might even get on stage with a banjo with him. So that would be
awesome. I've heard Jody play.
Fun time.
Jody is good. Really good.
Like
just picks the stuff by ear. It reminds me a lot of my brother. My brother's very musically gifted. I had a chance to hear Jody and his wife like do a duet on some stuff. Really, really, really good.
Oh yeah. He's a natural, man, but that'll be fun watching those two guys in action.
And that's actually a good segue. Cause before we jump too much, you know, I want to chat a little bit about the Bassmaster Championship that's coming up, BKS Championship on 10 Killer. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, some fishing stuff, get down into the actual nuts and bolts of catching them. But first, I want to talk a little bit about, I mentioned in the intro that you're a former tournament director, and you're kind of putting that hat back on again this year.
Yeah.
And it's Kayak Adventure Series. It's new. What's unique about your trail?
Yeah.
For anybody who hasn't already heard.
Yeah. I mean, you know, technically Amanda Brandon at Real Tournament Management is the tournament director, but really I've done a lot of, like you're saying, tournament director kind of roles. I set up the rules. I set up the boundaries. I've set this whole thing up. She's doing more of the judging part of the tournament director with her team. So I don't really know what to call myself other than founder, or, you know, someone said you're just the founder of fun or whatever, because this is all about fun, just having fun. We get out there, and you know, the way we kind of developed our format and rules was just like, you know, how does this help the anglers either catch more fish, catch bigger fish, and have more fun? And if it doesn't, we don't make it a rule. And if it does, we make it part of the game, right? So it's a lot different than the tournaments you and I love to fish, this high elite level stuff, which is certainly fun to me and to you and to Bailey and all of us out there that fish that stuff. But to a lot of people, it may not be their cup of tea yet. So they got to start somewhere. And the way to kind of get them involved and kind of, you know, get into the fun is hopefully through the Kayak Adventure Series presented by GoPro. And we got GoPro on board because we're holding these awards at like these historic theaters in all the cities we go to, these medium and small sized towns we're going to. They have these cool theaters. They might seat like, I don't know, 250, 500 people. I think one of them seats 1,000 people. So it's pretty cool because it gives us this, like, you know, a standard location, right? This nice stage at everyone. That's a place we're always at. So it's not like we're at different places every time. And I guess it feels you know, that consistency just kind of feels like the Bassmaster Elite Series stage, right? It's this consistent thing every time, the same stage, looks the same. And I want to give at least some sort of consistency to those like awards. And mm-hmm. so we can be able to show off the GoPro footage from the anglers. And
that's,
yeah, it's going to
be cool.
That's
one of the things I think is really cool that guys can actually like almost yeah. no, and it's going to be kind of no matter how you finish, like you get a chance to have your footage up there on the screen. And, you know, if you've yeah. got a cool catch,
that's
right.
That's
going to be awesome that anybody can have their footage on the TV behind. It's one of the cool things about the classic stage. When, you know, they put your big fish up there and, you know,
it is.
You've got Hank asking you questions about, hey, how'd it go? And yeah, yep. So you're going to kind of have sort of that feel with all the tournaments.
Yeah, and cool. That's right. And in video form. So now what we'll do is we'll bring the top 10 on stage and you might think, well, what if someone's not filming or whatever? But we're going to follow the top anglers with my own crew that will, you know, basically support their kayaks with GoPros or one GoPro at least, right? If not two, but probably one. And so they're going to kind of be far back just supporting their kayak, and we hardwire it and just make sure it's running, basically. So we stay out of their way. In the meantime, they might fly a drone or something or get some, you know, cell phone stuff. But if you're so hopefully our crew captures it or the anglers themselves, if you know you're going to have the potential to be on that big screen, and if it doesn't make the big screen, we still take anglers footage up to like a few weeks afterwards where they can submit it to the website for the edited TV show of that episode. So even if you don't make the top 10, you don't get a clip on the stage, or you know, if you don't make the top 10, like you said, if you have something amazing happen, an incredible fish catch or something, and you can get it to us before those awards, which it could be a tight timeline, obviously, with Saturday being the final day, and we only have a few hours from lines out to, you know, but it's not that hard to get a 30-second or a minute clip pared down and trimmed on that GoPro Quick app, submit it straight to us. I mean, 30 seconds, a minute doesn't take long over 5G signal to zip that sucker right over, and we can at least look at it and possibly get it into the show. But the awards are only, you know, an hour or so. A little bit more maybe, so we won't be able to get obviously everything in there, but I think that if you know you could be on the big screen on the TV edit, you're more likely to film. And I think that's what GoPro loves about it really is encouraging people to film, which it does another little cool sneaky thing for us too. The more filming, the better for, you know, for everybody, you know, for rules, for everything, just to ensure everything is you know, on the up and up. So there's a lot of cool things about it, and the footage is definitely one of them, but it also is cool because it's summer. We get to go inside. We'd be comfortable seats, air conditioning. You've got concessions, you know, food, drinks. And like I said, we can obviously have a cool little moment there on a real stage with some real lighting for the photos yeah. and the smoke going off or whatever we do to kind of make it fun. So that's cool. And then the other thing that people kind of talk about with it is just the format is different. The rules, there's an individual division, and there's a two-man team division, okay? And so and that's cool, obviously, that you can kind of have a partner and team up. And if you don't really want to spend the kind of money that you and I spend on this high elite-level tournaments, I mean, the team division's $150 between you and your partner, so that's $75 a piece. So it's really affordable if you just want to dip in at that level. But you can enter all of them. You can enter the individual and the team. You know, we just had Russ Snyder's on the KAS Live that we do every Wednesday at 11 today. And yeah, he's all in on all of it, of course, because if you're, you know, if you're going to, some of the big names are definitely going to fish a few of them just because, you know, they want to fish some of these different fisheries we're going to and enjoy the just kayak fishing as many events as they can. So he's just talking about, you know, how, yeah, we were talking about how if you do enter the individual, the team, and there's always a local club that has a joint event going on too. You enter that, nice. You know, someone's definitely going to walk away with five figures. You know, at most events, if we can probably get, you know, a couple hundred people, because our payout chart has the winner at the individual division, which is also $150. The winner, if you had 200 people, is going to get 7,000. So, I mean, that right there is pretty darn close. So if you enter the team division and obviously your team did well and you split $2,000 or $3,000 between the team, you're getting close. And then of course the local club tournament. So it's still going to pay out some big payouts if you choose to kind of go all in on everything. Right. So, gotcha. And there's also a cool division called the micro bag, Z-Man Micro Finesse Baits. They're sponsoring the micro bag division, which is your five smallest bass, minimum of 5 inches. So you might think, well, that's silly. That's kind of against the point of fishing and all this, but you got to think too, like, this is about fun. So how not fun is it to have a bad event? Cause it happens to all of us. Things don't go right. Your motor breaks or something, you know, your river, creek, or lake area gets blown out. It, you know, just, you make a bad decision and you're kind of stuck right somewhere. Well, now you don't have to just leave and trunk slam and just say, I'm going home. You got the micro bag division. You can say, you know what? I'm going to try to win some money and catch the five smallest, minimum of five. And it's actually cool, Justin, because you know how it's harder to catch a 22 and 23 than it is a 16? It's the same way. It's the same exact way. It's going to take some serious skill. It's easy to catch a 9 and a 10, 8, 9, and 10. They'll hit anything we throw. We catch them all the time on accident, right? But when you start trying to target a 5 and 6, dude, it's hard. It is hard to keep them hooked, to find where they live, and just to catch the right, in the right area of the lake where they're that size. Because sometimes you might need the spawn in that area of the lake to happen earlier or later so they get to that length. You see what I'm saying? It's like, it's really strategic, man. It really is. And the baits you got to use they're smaller than you think, because you'll bring up the fishing. Yeah. You want to try that?
Oh, I want to see if anybody is using a fly rod to win that. I'm not good at it at all. It's been years since I've even picked one of them up, but like, I just remember catching little tiny bluegill, and it was, I feel like if I was going to do that, I'd have a fly rod with me.
That's a good call, man. Little ice fishing rod or ultralight. It's definitely going to be interesting to see the strategies that people use for that. And it's just cool. They can, if you're not having a good day, you can still like fish for something and win something. And ideally, you know, somebody at some point is going to be just, and it could be someone like Russ that, you know, or Christine or whoever, you know, is already Jody, Abby, you know, talking about fishing these events. There's some good anglers. I'd be curious to see if someone's actually going to ever win the five biggest, the team division, you know, with their partner. As long as their partner doesn't bomb, if they win the individual, their partner does pretty good. They win the team, and we're calling the triple crown, the micro bag, the five smallest, all in one. Yeah, take the sweep. That would be a serious test of skill, for sure. So we'll see what happens. But it's crazy, man. You can tell, you next time you go out there, measure a small fish you catch, but guess how big it is before you put it on the board. And the same thing we do with big fish happens. Because you're thinking in your mind, you want it to be five and six. You're like, oh God, this is a five. This is a five. You put it on the board, and it's like 6 3/4. You're like, dang, it's not even like, you know, that happens to us. We think it's a 20, and you put it on the board, and how long is it? Like 19, 18 and 3/4. You're like, dang.
Yep.
It's the same thing, man, with the micro bag. It really is a fun, different challenge. And some people may just enter that on its own, which is fine. But a lot of people are hedging because they want to either win the triple crown or, if they have a bad day, you know, hit that division. And another cool part of the trail that people are really starting to like is the format we have, where it's interesting because there's opening ceremonies on Thursday. And then that's the check-in registration. The first 100 anglers get a gift bag that's worth $100 from our sponsors. $100 worth of stuff just for entering. That's the individual division, which costs $150. So if you enter that division, first 100 anglers, you get a gift bag. And so there's really no reason to not enter our tournaments early, because you can push your entry fee to another event. If something comes up and you can't make it, it just goes right to the next event. It's not like you don't get a refund. And then you can actually get a full refund minus about $10, because there's Tourney X fees and Stripe fees we can't get back. But pretty much the whole thing can get refunded up to 2 days, you know, in advance of the tournament. But anyway, the Thursday is the opening ceremonies check-in. It's like yard games, food, music, just hanging out, fun. And we'll have a quick little, you know, rules question and answer. All the rules are on the website. People can read. So it's more of a question and answer if you're a beginner. Because if you're someone who's already fished these tournaments, you don't really want to sit through some long rules thing. Sure. You know, you wouldn't be there anyway. It's just a question and answer for new people, really. And everyone's responsible for, obviously, the reading the rules on the site. So that's opening ceremonies. And then Friday, what's unique is Friday, because this whole, like, whole thing is like an event. It's not even like just a tournament. It's like a whole event, weekend long. So Friday morning, there's no pre-fishing allowed on Friday. Thursday was the last day. It's cut off. But Friday, they actually start fishing at 3. All the anglers do. So what do we do in between then? Well, first of all, you get rested, and it allows you to stay out late on Thursday, because that's the idea. It's all about camaraderie and fellowship with a series, right? Making sure we built in time for that. Well, if we started the tournament the next morning early, no one would be at our opening ceremony celebration, right? They would all be like, I got to get back and get rigged and get up early. No, you can sleep in, and if you're up late, you know, pushing each other in the bushes at 1 and 2 in the morning because you had a little too much fun, then that's all good. You can sleep it off. You come to our Bass University. You know Bass University. I know the Bass University is sponsoring our seminar series on Friday morning. It's called Bass U Brunch. So at 10 a.m., there's a designated location. You guys can see it all on the website, kayakadventureseries.com. And it tells you kind of who the speakers are, what we're talking about, and you get breakfast there, a brunch, whatever, and seminars. And it's like suggested $30, but you could, if you don't have any money, you could just donate $1. If you have more, you can donate more. It all goes to bringing the speakers on and the food and also the charities, the River Keepers we're supporting at each event.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool that we have that going on Friday, and it's optional, obviously, so people can come to it if they want. And then it's over by about 12:30, and then you get on the water at 3 or 2:30. You can technically be on the water. It's like you get a 30-minute window, just like any tournament, 30 minutes before you can get on, and then they fish till 7. So it's a cool little half day, which is people love this because it's like an afternoon bite gets to be part of our strategy. It's a weekday still, so people are not like the locals aren't all over the water yet. It hasn't gotten beaten up all Saturday and Sunday. So that's kind of nice. And then it just changes your strategy because it's a 4-hour window. So you can't go do some 12-mile float on a river in 4 hours, right? So you got to like change this strategy up completely. It also gives you a chance to kind of correct a mistake. Let's say you're, because again, this is really kind of catering to the beginner intermediate type anglers, even though there will be definitely some big names, like I said, that'll fish some, but it's really more for this beginner intermediate type angler that's kind of getting into it. And then maybe they graduate and eventually, go fish some bigger stuff and hopefully still fish some of these. But what it does is if you think about it, like how many times have you made a mistake? Like you go somewhere you think it's going to be good on Saturday morning, the very first morning of a tournament, and it's just not good. And it's hard to, at that point, all the time. It's hard, man. You go 3 miles somewhere, it's hard to recover, get back and move in the middle of the day and try to get recover. It's very hard. So what we've done is made it that half day gives you a little bit of a test area time, right? And if you didn't have a good pre-fishing, you can still like go and gamble on a new spot on that Friday because any fish you catch are going to count. And what's cool and where this really comes full circle is it's just a 5-fish tournament. So even between Friday and Saturday, the half day Friday
when you catch them.
Doesn't matter when you catch them. So yeah, exactly. So it gives you that chance to kind of correct a mistake because you can catch 5 good ones in a day. So you make a bad decision on Friday, or you make a good decision, you find something new you didn't know was there, or you found something great, and maybe you win the whole thing on Friday. Who knows? I mean, you could blow it out. But it lets you know what to do on Saturday a little bit better. And then for those big names that are in the event, what's cool is it's just a 5-fish tournament. So, the more fish you have, the more days of a golf tournament there are, 4 days, the more days of a pro, like a bass tournament there are, like Elite Series, the more likely that the top anglers are definitely going to like rise. Okay. But in a 1-fish derb, I mean, anybody could beat Kevin Van Dam. You know what I mean? Anyone could beat Wheeler potentially in a 1-fish because you could catch a 23 and he might catch a 40 fish all day long, but not get one that's that long. So by keeping it to 5 over that day and a half, it really kind of levels that playing field where anyone can still pull this off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, even though you could have, well, I guess this is a question. If mm-hmm. are people allowed to sign up for the single angler, you sign up for the weekend, you can't make it there. You got to work. Yeah. You can't make it there until Saturday. It's like, you don't even need to fish the Saturday or the Saturday, the Friday, and you can still have your day of fishing, get out there and have a chance to win.
Yeah, you can. You can do that totally. You don't have to fish Friday. Now, I think obviously most people will, or some people that are local might get off work a little earlier, get out there. Maybe they miss a little time, but I think that, Friday will definitely be, critical on most events. But a lot of times you think about it, even for Friday's 4 hours, you're going to learn something. You're probably going to smash all day on Saturday and call out every fish you caught on Friday to win. So it basically makes Friday irrelevant in some ways, when those tournaments are going to be won like that. But some people are going to need the fish. They catch on Friday, of course. So
sure.
Nice having it in there just to see. It also tells us as a tournament trail, who are we going to follow on Saturday? It gives us a storyline. We know who's on fish. We know what's happened. We kind of see what's going on. So it's kind of cool. Nothing happens Or by the way, on Friday, you can, people can, of course, drive around and scout water and do all they want. They just can't get like on the water and actually fish before prior the tournament starts. But they can still drive around, set up shuttles, do whatever you got to do. And then you could even be at places and see how many people showed up there. And then, switch gears, you know.
Too many guys at this ramp.
Yeah. So, and then on Saturday, it's all day, you know, fishing like normal. And then lines out at 3:00. And then we'll have a big festival with merchandise booths and bouncy houses and kid zone music. All that stuff's going back on at the tournament headquarters around 2:00. You know, lines out isn't till 3:00, but we'll start it usually a little early for friends and family in the community as well that just wants to come be a part of it. And then you guys all get back when you get back. You know, some people might be a 30-minute or 45-minute paddle or motor just to get back to the ramp, and they got 45-minute drive. I mean, you guys will get back whenever, but, 4:35, 4:00, 3:30, doesn't matter. Just enjoy the fun. Come get your, get some drinks, get some food in your body. Just have fun. Again, it's this time of just fellowship and fun. And then 6:00, we'll start those awards. It gives us time, you know, to put together some footage from Friday. We got some footage from Saturday, whether it's from our crew or the anglers themselves that have submitted through the website. And then we show off, obviously, all the, you know, fish on the awards, and it's pretty cool. And then we have a designated after party after the tournament's over, because here's the beauty. It's just Saturday, guys. Yeah. We get a party again on Saturday night and go to the after party designated location, whether it's a brewery or a restaurant or whatever we've got. Every one of them has a designated spot with games and stuff going on. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And then the other thing that I will mention, and you can ask any other questions and, or we can move on to another topic that is unique about it, is the fact that, and this is one of the reasons I started it, is just because for so many years after I stopped, running the River Bassin Trail, which is probably a little bit ahead of its time, it was river only, and this one is not. And the reason it's not is because river only was tough, Justin, because we would have events get flooded out for weather. I mean, just rain, just flooded out. And then how do you reschedule a big national event and everyone's getting vacation time off planning on that weekend? And we're working with that town and the tourism, and it's like, they have something else going on the other weekends. It's hard to fit it back in. So I didn't want to, I also just love lakes and rivers. So I'm like, why would we not want to include everything? And just celebrate everyone's style and the diversity of fish your strengths. So people were messaging me all the time about bring back River Bassin, bring it back. So I knew there was a demand, and then, but I still wanted to keep tournament fishing myself. Cause like you see here, obviously, we fish tournaments. I've had some success fishing and I love it myself. So I don't want to give some that up.
Success.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, yeah, whatever, done decent and probably better than I even expected. And I'm not going to give that up yet. So I just wanted to be able to still do something and run this. So I said, well, I got to just do maybe six. We're just going to do six of these things. So that's 5 regular season and 1 finale, which we call Broodstock. That's Broodstock is like our Red Crest, right? Your classic. So Broodstock. And that's in Bowling Green, Kentucky this year. So I wanted to just do a few of them so I could still fish myself. But basically everyone was like, bring something back, bring it back. So I said, well, we can't do just rivers because we saw what happened last time with the flooding. And I like fishing in lakes and rivers. And I think it'd be cool if we develop this sort of thing that's like, the best example that we've kind of come up with, Alex Rudd, loves this one since he's a big UFC fan, but we talk about how this is like the UFC because our format and our rules allow, motors, allow obviously all the electronics, live scope, anything you want it to do, power poles, any of the, on that side of the world, you can bring it. But then it also allows and gives another like advantage back the other direction and equals the playing field to those who are like you and I, which we're going to talk about later in this podcast, our styles that are more old school, no electronics, like to beat the banks, fish up the backwaters, rivers, creeks. We like to get into those kind of sneaky places that the kayak was, really designed for. Originally, that's where the boom happened first because, the bass boats, the lakes got crowded and we wanted to find unpressured fish and kayaks kind of boomed. So what's cool is we allow people to access from any public access you can find. If it's public, and then also, portage over obstacles that if you don't feel safe going under a log or around or trying to do anything crazy and staying in your kayak, we want you to be able to portage around a rapid or around logs and trees and places, as long as you're in the same watershed that it's free flowing and the fish can, and the bait can all move freely. you know, up and down. And you can read the rules. There's a little bit of a couple nuances to it, but basically it's anything that's part of our core bodies of water that are listed on the site. So whether the core bodies of water that the lakes or the rivers, anything free flowing into that, including spillway dams. So even above those spillway dams that are just running the river, they're not making another like lake. They are inbound. So basically now you kind of, you know, because you've seen how much LiveScope dominates, and it's going to continue to push into kayak fishing big time now, because we're seeing what it's doing in the bass boat world. So that's going to be the way to dominate and win. But then we have at least our rule set's kind of cool, because now people can still combat that, because it's not needed in a lot of these, you know, rivers and creeks and backwaters and shallow places that you can get to, because, you know, you're allowed to get out and portage around stuff and access from wherever. And you can beat someone with a motor there. If they're trying to get there from a boat ramp and a motor, you can still do stuff like that. And so it's kind of cool to see the different styles of anglers come together in one octagon, battle it out, you know, and I kind of already know what's going to happen. We're going to see somebody in the top 10, like the winner could have been live scoping, and next could have been in a creek, and the next could be up in a river, and next was in an oxbow, and the next guy's skipping docks. It's going to kind of let, like, I think all styles sort of like be kind of littered throughout the top, you know, 10, 15%. We're actually paying out 15% all the way down to 15% too on our payouts. Not, you know, for that $7,000 for 200 anglers. So we're paying all the way down to 15% too. So it's cool to see what the rule set and the format will do, you know, because I think a lot of people feel like this is River Bassin 2.0, and there are a lot of river and kind of, you know, guys that like to just fish and access from creative stuff that's all public and legal, and we're allowed to do it on any given Saturday, Sunday, when we go fishing. A lot of those guys are going to fish the series, but guess what that's going to leave open then? If that's true, then it's going to leave open the lakes, just wide open, like no pressure for the lake angler. So it's going to swing back in their favor. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. The other small things I'll mention is just that there's a lot more unique rules, but we do allow two rods at one time. So if you have a big smallmouth chase in your bait, you can throw in and try to catch the other one. Or an Alabama bass or a shoal bass, you can catch the other one. Boom, why not? We want to get that on GoPro so we can show it in the theater. We want you catching two fish at one time, as long as it's legal in the state to do that, which most states it is. I think Minnesota it's not, and some other places. We want to be able to capture that. And if you can do it on a Saturday and Sunday, and again, back to rule number one, how is it going to help our anglers catch more fish or bigger fish and have more fun? What's not fun about that, right? Throwing a second rod in, catching that fish.
That's chaos.
So why in the world? Yeah, it is a beautiful chaos. So why not allow that? We're like, what? You know, it's our trail. Let's do it. So we decided let's allow that. Let's allow, let's allow trolling. Cause we thought about it. Like, why is trolling not allowed in kayak tournaments? It makes no sense. Like, it's not like the trolling is the A rig, you know what I mean? Like where they thought, oh my God, every tournament's going to be won with this same tactic. We got to like ban the A-rig. Hardly anything's going to be one with trolling, like hardly at all, right? I mean, it's not like it's a tactic. If you made it legal in the Bassmaster Elite Series, how many events will get one with trolling? Like none. So why not allow it? Because in kayaks, we have to go slow. Even with a motor, you're only going like 3, 4, 5 miles an hour for most people. Dude, throw a crankbait out. If you're moving in the lake, you can do that on any Saturday. Let's do it. You might find a school of fish you didn't know was there. So we wanted to allow that, which is kind of cool because it came into play on the micro bag live stream we did, where someone was like, Alex Rudd and John Dalton from Creek Fishing Adventures were on, and somebody, I think Jake Heppner is, I don't know if you know Jake, Illinois Yakker on IL Yakking on Instagram. He said, okay, I could see somebody throwing a floating fly with a bobber and having it in a rod holder sitting there while they're fishing for the big bass. Cause you can use two rods at once. So why would you not try? And then I was laughing, like saying like, someone's going to put a bell on a little rod on the, it's floating there with a fly. It's
just catfish bell.
Basically you could be double dipping, man, but it's wild. So two rods at once, trolling, even canoes are allowed. If you don't have a kayak, you have a canoe. We thought about it. We said, you know, people come into the series with a canoe, they're more likely going to see how cool these kayaks are and leave thinking, I need to go buy a kayak. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and there's no advantage over it. It's still the same thing, you know, troll motor sure. only. And you know, obviously we're just paddle power. So we thought it was cool to include that because we just want to get the most people there to have the biggest party, the biggest payout, the most fun possible. So it's kind of like a no holds bar, just let's get after it kind of deal. And there is an AOI for, you know, for the team and the individual. There's basically just fish. You just have to fish two of the five regular season events, and your score goes your two. You could fish three or four, obviously. Give yourself like a mulligan or two.
But your top two count.
Your top two count, and then combine with that the finale at the broodstock. And I'm very, very cautious to say finale and not championship, because I never want someone to think that's a something you got to qualify for. It's an open event. It's just more prizes, raffling off more prizes, giving away more prizes to the winners. Most of that, every event, by the way, a kayak gets donated or raffled off for pediatric cancer. So we're raising money for pediatric cancer through the Punt Foundation, which is Alex Rudd introduced me to. And he talks about that on his podcast all the time. And so we're going to give the money to the Punt Foundation. And what's cool is we were able to get a kayak manufacturer to be the official sponsor of each event, right? So it's kind of cool because we got Bonafide, New Canoe, we've got Crescent, Old Town, and I want to say, yeah, Feel Free right now. So there may be another one coming for the finale we'll announce, but that's five of those kayaks are all going out, and it's kind of cool because it kind of brings, you know, a lot of different brands and the kayak fishing sort of family together. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But the AOI for the individual and team, that's kind of how it works. And it's a unique AOI format. I won't bore you with all the details, but essentially, interesting to see what your thoughts are. But essentially, to make the math easy, it's a percentage-based AOI. So if there is a, let's say the winner of the event gets 100 inches, catches 100, right? And let's say the second place angler gets 90. So that's 90% of 100, right? So that person gets, 90 AOI points, not go 199. It goes, so everyone just gets what they deserve. But essentially, let's say the winner catches 80 inches. 80 inches is now your bucket's full. That's 100%. That's the best you could have done on that body of water. So now it's everyone's percentage. So if you got 75%, inches, whatever that is, when you do the percentage, it's probably like, I don't know what it is, probably...
I can't do math in my head like that.
97, I don't know. It could be 90. It's either 96 or 97 points or something like that, probably.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's the opposite way. Maybe it's like 93 or 94. But either way, it's you just get what you earn, which is cool because you ever seen these big events that have 250 anglers, And then the AOI points go down one by one. And there's a lot of people stacked, We're tight.
Yeah.
Well, then you have an event that has the same series. It has like 78 or 90 people. And somebody gets fifth place there and they still get the 95 points for AOI. Mm-hmm. Well, it was much harder to get fifth out of 250. So it rewards the anglers. Actually, just you get what you exactly earned. And people could actually, like if you tied the winner, if he had 80 inches and you had 80 and they won by the tiebreaker, you still get the same AOI points.
That's
and,
cool.
And Abby Abundanza, he blew out the field. He deserves more AOI points because he really bested the field by a lot. Because if you look at the standings of the Logan Martin event, he probably won by seven or eight inches, but
I think
everyone after that was very close. So he should kind of deserve, he earned this gap. If that was the first event for the year, let's say he kind of earned a little bit of gap in AOI because he really crushed it. So it's kind of cool because if you got a bunch of people that are stacked up within an inch or two, and you happen to be on the bottom of that list, if you're in 15th place, but there's only an inch and a half separating 15th and seventh or sixth, it's kind of a bum when you're like, dang, man, look how close I was, but this, it doesn't matter. You just get what you earn based on that percentage format. So lots of cool stuff like that. We're kind of trying to introduce and be different. And the last thing, I keep saying last thing, I think of more things. So eventually I gotta, we'll get onto other topic, but last thing that is really cool that people have brought up, they always bring up, well, it's a bummer that it starts on Friday. I got to take off work and that's going to be, now I got to get there on Thursday night for the opening ceremonies and all that. But what's cool about it is our pre-fishing strategy. We give you a 2-week window. So two Fridays prior to tournament Friday, there's 2 weeks, right? So just go two Fridays prior. That's when your 2-week window of pre-fishing starts. You're allowed to start fishing then. And what's cool is you're allowed 4 days of pre-fishing in that period, right? So you get to pick which four. You totally get to pick which four. And people will say, well, how do you monitor that? How do you police that? Well, you can't. But the same way you can't police, right now, if it's you get 3 days or 7 days, whatever it is with pre-fishing and some of these events, you can never police that. You can't, because someone could be, that's just a rule that, through polygraph and the threat of obviously like prosecution, if we you know, if you're caught, you know, prosecute you for fraud or whatever. And so, and obviously, like, it's not like someone's winning $100,000. So hopefully no one, you know, people have seen what's happened by cheaters in our sport already, how they've got caught, how they've lost jobs, they've ruined marriages, lives, whatever. It's just not worth it, you know? So hopefully that's fine. But either way, let's just say someone cheated and they got 5 or 6 days of practice. Well, at a normal event, when you have 7 days or unlimited, you still only have the days you can get off work and you're away from your family. You still only have 2 days or 3 days. So at most, you know, somebody else is, hopefully we're all, if everyone's following the rule, right? Which I think most people, most everyone will, which by the way, even if they don't, they still have to actually use that knowledge to actually go catch the fish and, yeah, and win too. It doesn't even mean they are going to necessarily like win or do better because they got an extra day or two because they broke a rule. But, you know, you still have what you have to get off of work, you know, and we just want to give a 2 week window to make it flexible. And worst case, you know, that some of these anglers who are, you know, have a different period of life, and maybe they're living out of their van traveling, they have the ability to just camp for 2 weeks straight if they want to. Hopefully you now know that, okay, you might only have 2 or 3 days, but they only got four. They only got one or two more than you. So you're not [S2] Sure. [S1] At home a week before the event, you know, or whatever, and seeing all these people fishing and pre-fishing, and you can't get off and get there yet. You know, everyone's got four. So that's kind of cool, because let's say you live, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, you know, away from an event in your region. You can just fish that, go leave work, not use any vacation on Friday, fish Saturday, Sunday, go back home, fish the next Saturday and Sunday, do it again. There's your 4 days. And all you had to take off was one day of work, not like a, you know, some other tournaments, maybe you would have to take off the week before to get 4 days. You'd have to take off pretty much the whole week to get there and have, you know, Monday, Tuesday, yep, Wednesday, Thursday. So you got to take off more time. So we're just trying to make it more flexible. So if you do live close, but if you live far away, if you're driving 15 hours or 12 hours, you are going to take off that week of work anyway. You know what I mean? To like get there and have your days, your pre-fishing days be all right before the event, just like you would for any other Hobie or Bassmaster or KBF event. Now that's the way you're going to do it. No one's going back home, you know, after you drive 12, right, 15 hours. So it actually frees it up where you can use less vacation time. And it kind of levels it out a little bit where it's not dominated and won every time by someone who just happens to have, you know, they're at a stage in life where they can fish as much as they want, as long as they want. So, but yeah, the events, just so we cover them real quick. And I know this is probably going to audio too. So, we'll say them here. They're going to be, they all have a festival name. So Sholi Palooza is the first one, May 3rd and 4th, Thomaston, Georgia. The second one is in Whitehall, Michigan. It's called Wild Whitehall. And that's going to be a battle, which, by the way, Sholi Palooza, I'm sure people know this, but if not, that's going to be where you catch the shoal bass, the rare black bass species called the shoal bass that gets big. That if you've never caught one, it's definitely one to cross off the bucket list. Okay, I've caught one. It was 24 1/4 inches. They get really big. It's two of them over those 7 pounds. One of them was obviously that 24 1/4. So they get really big. They're really fun. They have big mouths, bigger than a small mouth. They live in the rapids and the shoals. And of course, obviously I named the Sholi kayak after the shoal bass. So that's the first one. Then Michigan's number two. And that's going to be a battle between, you know, Whitehall, Michigan. There's like 11 lakes and mounds, man. Like there's a bunch of lakes, lots of rivers. And it's smallmouth versus largemouth kind of battle up there. It's really cool. So basically these bays that flow into the east side of Lake Michigan, right? These big lakes, bays, whatever you want to call them. You can't fish the main lake, but you can fish those. And all these lakes that are up on that border, and then the smallmouth and the largemouth that are up in the rivers too. And there's smallmouth in the lakes too. But anyway, it's gonna be pretty wild, like battle, because there's big 6 and 7 large pound largemouth up there too. It's and you catch a lot of fish. So, and then you're gonna go over to Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Again, sort of a largemouth, smallmouth battle. That's right on where the Ozark Mountains start. So you got the floodplain of the Mississippi River on this side. You got the Ozark Mountains on this side of Poplar Bluff, which sits right in the middle. And it's just going to be wild to see what wins, you know, the Clearwater lakes and, you know, Highland kind of Clearwater lakes, or is it more the more stained water in the floodplain, you know, kind of interesting to see how many, you know, if it's spotted bass should play there too. There's spotted bass get pretty decent size there, 16, 17 inches. So that'll be fun, little battle. And then that's in July. And then I think it was June 6th and 7th, by the way, if I didn't mention the other one for Whitehall, but July, like 12th and 13th, something like that, for the Ozarkana is what we're calling the Ozark one. And then The next one is on the Susquehanna, the Fiesta on the Susquehanna in Towanda, Pennsylvania, but it's further north on the North Branch. It's actually kind of near the border of New York. So you got New York and Pennsylvania water in bounds. And that one doesn't have any lakes because there's just no lakes around, and it's the Susquehanna. So, but that's August. I think it's like 7th and 8th or 9th and 10th, something like that. And then, and you can fish up again, all the rivers, all the creeks and rivers, and even into New York and the Chemung River. So that'll be interesting to see what happens there, but it definitely will be dominated by smallmouth, obviously. And then it's up to Wisconsin for the Wisconsin River Fest in the town of Sauk Prairie, Wisconsin. And that one is cool because when I first posted that, Christine Fisher said she's definitely going to try to come to that one because she loves the Wisconsin River. She said it's better than the Susquehanna in her opinion. And that's when the bomb just, everyone just was like, what are you saying? Something is better than the Susquehanna. So the Wisconsin River Fest, and just so you know, the Wisconsin River flows out of Sauk Prairie and it eventually goes into like pool 11 of, you know, down from La Crosse, maybe it's pool 11 or 12. It dumps into the Mississippi River there. So you can imagine it's like a mini Mississippi, but a little bit probably more on the smallmouth side of things. You know, how like La Crosse is like, you know, you can kind of chase largemouth or smallmouth, but I think more people probably go largemouth there. A little easier to find largemouth than the smallies, which kind of roam a little bit more. Wisconsin River is a little bit, I think it's going to be a little bit more smallmouth dominated. Like it might be like 60, 40 or 70, you know, 30 even, but you can still do both because Lake Wisconsin is in bounds. There's a couple different lakes in bounds for that event. So it's going to be really cool to see what happens there. But people posted some pictures of giant smallmouth after Christine posted that on Facebook. And I mean, they were like 21 and a half, 21 inch, and they were as tall as they were like long. Dude. It was unreal. So they're giants in there. So that's cool. And then, like I said, the finale is in, sorry, that one, by the way, was September, like the beginning of September 6th and 7th or something. And then the finale is October, like 3rd and 4th, and in kind of a centralized location in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is probably like 45 minutes from the border of Tennessee. It's not far. So you got kind of that water close to Nashville. It's probably only an hour or something from Nashville, a little over maybe an hour, 15, hour and a half from Nashville at most. But it's close to there. So it's kind of like, it feels like a little Tennessee, feels like Kentucky, Tennessee mix there. And there's Nolan Lake, I believe. There's Barren or Green River Lake or Barren River Lake. I can't remember which one. The Green River, the Barren River. It's creeks or lots of creeks there in bounds. So, yeah, it's pretty cool to see it all come together. And those are the
I'm definitely excited for you. I hope that it's you get massive turnout, and I'm excited because I've talked on the show before about really enjoying. I think I messed up when I started tournament fishing. I'm super competitive, and I'm going to go out there and chase money and trophies, and I went at the national trails first. I never fished a local club deal until after, and especially last year, I did a whole lot more local events than I've ever done before. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. You're not spending as much time. There's a different, I'm not, putting in a bajillion practice days and I'm not stressing about it. It's fun. It's more laid back. And I think that your kayak adventure series is going to have that feel that it's just going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of to a point where I've got to step back a little bit from the tournaments. I can't do quite as many as I had the last couple of years. So I've definitely the last one I did, I really appreciated the guys that I'm staying with, staying with some great guys, and it's just enjoying that camaraderie
experience.
Yeah. It's tough that you kind of take for granted where it's, when I was first doing it, it was, I'm going to go tent camp and I'm going to be in my own little bubble and I'm going to go, like I said, chase checks and hardware. And it's a lot of fun, but you can also burn yourself out doing that and miss the stuff that really, even if you have a bad tournament, if you're hanging out with good guys, you're still fishing. It's still fun. And I think that's something that it's easy to get lost. Like, when you have a bad tournament and you took time off work and you drove real far, and it's even if you have a bad tournament, I think, or fishing wise, you don't have a great performance. I think with the kayak adventure series, you're still going to have a good time and you're not going to regret the trip.
Exactly. Cause the fisheries we're going to, I mean, obviously I had 6 bullets to fire for the first year, and I've traveled and fished this whole country, and even the place that I haven't fished, I've just scouted them all. I know about them. And I was like, I'm going to take us to the 6 coolest places. And if everyone just trusts me and they show up, we're going to go to cooler places next year. That schedule's already done. And it is so epic. Some of the places we're going to go to, we create our own game. You know, this is our own boundary. It's our own map. We get to tap into, you know, cities and communities that have never had, the knock on the door. Hey, we'd love to hold a fishing tournament and show how awesome your resources are, because let's face it, the lakes are just so overcrowded and beat up. We want to go to new places. So when you combine two and three lakes together, you have enough water to hold in the rivers and creek miles, 300, 400, 500 people, 600 people. No reason why we can't have that many people. And people could still find their own water to be alone. And then you're looking around like, this is incredible. I'm fishing against 500 people and no one's around right now. I'm by myself. But I like what you said, and I want to touch on it, that when you went and you actually stayed with other guys, the friendships you develop, it's like that means more than any hardware I have. You know what I mean? The friendships and the memories, for sure. And I know other people feel the same way, because when something happens in my life, I lose a job, something bad happens, you know, maybe you guys out there, you know, whatever, you lose a family member or somebody, like something, when you have those friendships you developed, you know, that a trophy can never console. You can never be someone to call. And I know so many people who, through the River Bassin Trail, through Hobie or Bassmaster or KBF or whatever, the, you know, staying in the houses together, like you're saying, those friendships have just changed people's lives for the better. So that's what we wanted to do. And you learn a lot from the other anglers that you're rubbing elbows with at those houses. So the Kayak Adventure Series, you're going to learn a lot from, you know, when you're there and like Russ is there and Jody and Abby and any other that really good anglers who, you know, have said they're going to be at these events, Robert Weicker or Christine, there's time to be there and hang out with them. When you see Gene Jensen and Alex Rudd and all the people, it's like, no, they're not just there. Hi, bye. I'm on the stage doing something. See you later. It's like all this built in time to rub elbows with them. And of course, whoever you may be staying with, and kind of, you know, get a little better, learn a couple things here and there. And that's kind of what I think that I've noticed when I stay with people at the houses. Even I'm still learning something from the conversations we have about the strategy and the tournament, you know, it's pretty cool. So, and then Sunday, I did forget to mention, even though Sunday there's nothing going on officially, really, other than, if you want to stick around, there's a $25 side pot, you know, Batteries Plus Sunday tournament. The Batteries Plus stores is sponsoring $25 side pot. So you can still fish again. It's just 6 hours from the time you check in on Tourney X until, you know, 6 hours after that time. And it's just X2 batteries and stuff, or gifts from X2 batteries. But it's pretty cool. But it's just another chance to kind of practice for a tournament setting. If you just show up on Saturday for the festivities and then just fish that, you could do that for just $25. And then we're also holding ACA seminars. Jeff Little, Russ, myself, all of us who have gotten ACA certified, which is the American Canoe Association, certified us to be teachers for kayak fishing and level one paddling. Some of us have already gotten level two and three paddling skills endorsements that we can teach you guys about, you know, safety and paddling skills and things that really help you become a better angler. So because Sunday's free, it's really cool to see what kind of things people are going to do on Sunday. Maybe there's a group of four guys that love to play golf. Oh, let's go to tee time. You know, let's go play golf on Sunday. Let's go do the ACA seminar with let's get Jeff and, or let's go do Jeff and Russ or Dustin Hoy from Raccoon Creek or Wade from Yak Attack. He's certified. I'm sure he might be at one doing them on Sunday. So it's kind of like cool to see what Sunday's going to do. And of course, if you got a 12-hour drive or 15-hour drive, you got all Sunday to get back. And it's a lot easier to take Friday off work than it is Sunday. Friday is the slack day of the week. Monday's a tough day. So it gets people back in time for Monday. Because if you have a long trip, you know, you end on a tournament on a Sunday, it's hard to get all the way home from Monday's work. And Monday's a little bit busier day. So it, you know, I think that's another cool thing about it. So we'll see what happens, but I'm excited to see how it shakes down. And just
me too.
Can't wait, man.
I want to get in there and catch a Scholey. I don't know if I'll make it this year, but I'm going to get to the Flint River at some point and catch some Scholey.
Yeah, man.
But I want to shift gears a little bit to the, you know, I mentioned I don't get to fish as many events this year as I have in the past. So I'm definitely savoring the ones that I do get to fish. We were talking earlier.
Same here.
you have yet to fish one this year. And so I can only imagine how excited you are for this upcoming Bassmaster Kayak Series Championship on
Tenure. Very, very excited, man. You know, Oklahoma, I won Grand Lake that year.
I remember
AOI. And so Oklahoma, it's got a real, you know, nice place in my heart. Here it is. This is it right here, actually. So I like Oklahoma for sure. And I know kind of what the fish were doing then. And this is a little bit before that in the year, but they might be doing the similar stuff because it's been pretty warm out there. Yeah. And if anyone remembers, you can go back and look. I mean, I won that on a spawning pocket on the main lake, kind of mid lake mid lake on Grand. So anyway, they could be kind of staging in these like spawning pockets and stuff. So, you know, they were definitely stacked up there. So maybe something similar could be found. But anyway, I'm excited about it because 10 killer is just a really good fishery. And it's just never been highlighted before in kayak fishing circles other than local clubs, which you can go and see some of the local clubs. I think like mid 80s, upper 80s, someone's going to crack 90 probably a day. It's going to do it, but I think you probably have to average like high 80s for 2 days in a row to win it. So we will see if that holds true, but,
I'm curious, excited, man. I remember hearing about that lake. I think it was, I read Jimmy Houston's book years and years ago. And if I remember right, he had moved to that lake and that was his home lake at one point. And I don't know at what point, I don't remember the years. So I'd say the lake is significantly older at this point. Maybe you don't have quite as much cover in the water. Mm-hmm. But just from some of the research I did, I think it's going to be that Ozark-type lake to Grand. Maybe not quite as many docks, but it looks like a lot of rock, a lot of maybe some flooded bushes in places. But I think we'll have some docks and plenty of rock for the guys that like to crank and drag jigs around and stuff. It should be fun.
Big smallmouth too. I mean, largemouth and smallmouth all over the lake. You can catch them everywhere, which is cool.
Are they Alabama bass there? Are they actually?
No, they're spots. They are spots. Yeah, they're actual spots, but they can still get pretty big there. You might catch a 16, 17 incher. If you catch one over that 18, it's seriously something. But they're in there, and because that spotted bass is so far away, you got to think about the main Mississippi River like an ocean. Right. So any spotted bass that are on the west side are they're the same thing, but they're over the course of history of time, they are probably a little bit slightly different, like genetically, because they're just, I guess that's how, I don't know, things. I'm not like a biologist, but I understand a little bit. So I don't know the right terminology, but they could never get to the other one. So if you got some fisheries and places that populations where they're trapped and smaller, then they're never going to reconnect. So they're a little bit possibly a little bit different. I've heard of some, even being caught before that were like 4 and 5 pounds that were true spotted bass. When you listen to like BTL and stuff like that, Mark Jeffries and Panger, I've heard them talk about times and tournaments that have been won with some, but obviously you're talking weight. So that's like not length. So they just got real fat because of maybe a shad spawn situation or something like pre-spawn plus shad spawn gorged up. I don't know. But anyway, you could potentially catch one 17 inches, even though they're, the northern strain Kentucky spots, whatever you want to call them, but they could be a player.
Yeah, I think it's cool that I'm trying to think, and just off the top of my head, I can't think of the last time I fished a venue in a tournament where all three species were present. Maybe are there smallmouth on Grand?
There are, but not as many.
They're a different strain, right?
Aren't they? Yeah, they're a little bit different strain. Yeah, they're a different strain, and they don't do as well on the main lake, but people have kind of mixed in this strain here with them. So, we'll see what happens if that, gotcha. I don't know if they'll take off or what's going to happen. They're going to mix. That's why biologists are kind of ticked off, because it's going to mess up with the genetics, of them. Cause once you lose a pure strain, of something,
it
hybridizes, you can never get it back. So, but anyway, but it is cool to see what's going to happen with that. Can you, target the smallmouth in some way, or do you just kind of fish what you fish? And there's enough, there's a lot of rock in the lake. So smallmouth love rock. It's just the largemouth are using it too. So it's kind of like, do you just go and fish the stuff that you fish and you catch what you catch, and it doesn't really matter to us what species it is. It's just cool that, they're in there. You can catch them all over the lake and they get pretty big. So I'm excited to see how it goes down. Carl Jakobsen won the Bassmaster tournament there. If you go back and watch that tournament, which is a really, really cool tournament, because it got moved there from Fort Gibson because of the COVID year, and it got pushed back late.
It was flooding too.
Yeah, it was flooding. It was crazy. So he did the final day, he had like 19 pounds 10 ounces or something. So I mean, that's a really solid like 90 something inch bag, for sure. But that's not the, that, you know, most guys at that tournament, they were, you know, were, you know, 10, 11, 12 pounds was good, you know,
it was tough. So
it was tough because it was, you know, fall and whatnot. But anyway,
it was August or September,
it was not your
ideal tournament time for big weights anyway. It's a grinder.
And he won, I think he was more in the lower lake and he won with mostly largemouth, but he did have that last day, his kicker was a smallmouth. So, I mean, they just show up all different places. It maybe feels a little bit like lacrosse in the sense that your smallies just sort of roam and end up wherever they end up, and they kind of live on everything, and you might just run into a wolf pack of them and they could be gone the next day. But then the largemouth, whatever you're catching them on, are just going to like stay there maybe. So we'll see, man. I'm excited about it, just getting out there and seeing what happens. And it's a Bassmaster Championship, man. It's the classic. It's all rolled into one. It's the biggest. You know, I was close at Possum Kingdom. I got fourth. And then on Russell the next year, I felt like I had it won. And then they shut the generation off at the dam, even though they said they were going to generate all day on the schedule.
Oh, day two.
I don't know if, yeah. So that was frustrating to me because I knew I would have had it won if they would have kept it going, because I was on them when the water was up and rolling, and they cut it off, even though, which is just odd. Someone said that they heard they were holding water back. They changed the schedule to get the Hartwell higher for the classic for the next day for anglers. Ooh. And if so, that could have cost me big. So I've got a little bit of a axe to grind with this championship, because the next year on Chickamauga, I was fishing the same place Russ was. We were sharing water. We had found the right stuff. And I lost two giants on that final day. And I only had six bites total. And I lost those two and ended up with four fish. If I just catch one of those fish, I'm on, you know, on stage, probably in the top five. And if I catch the other one, I probably win. So, and they came off on spinner baits of all things, dude. So that was a heartbreaker, man. So it's been one of those. I've never won a big, you know, championship or anything. There's only like, you know, three majors in our sport. You know, if you consider KBFs and Hobies and Bassmasters, and was second at KBF. So to me, man, these are the ones that, like you're saying, I'm not fishing as many events anymore either. Right. So I'm running this kayak adventure series. I'm focusing on the right ones, and especially, you know, hopefully any championships. So, and I don't even know if I'll be able to get to the Hobie this year, because I'm not sure I'll be able to get to any Hobies. Just the schedule didn't work out. And then on top of that, KBF NC, I'm not sure I'll be able to make it down for that either. So this might be my only chance this year. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm excited, man. So
I'm not betting against you. You've beat me too many times.
We'll see, man. This live scope, this technology is definitely like it's getting harder and harder to do kind of what we do in this sport and exist.
That's another great segue, because that was kind of where I wanted to go next. And I don't want to get into a big, you know, sort of clickbaity, you know, bashing forward facing or is it good or is it bad? But we were talking earlier, and I was really impressed with, you know, I stayed with Bailey at the Murray tournament and just kind of seeing what he was able to do with that. You know, I knew I wasn't good with electronics and I'm not great offshore. You know, I'm a bank beater. You know, I like throwing at stuff I can see and catching fish that way. But I saw just how far behind I am with, and I guess how far everybody's advancing with that technology. So I do want to learn that at some point. I don't know that I'm going to end up with a unit this year, but I was curious, have you experimented with that? Have you taken that plunge and got a forward facing unit?
Not yet. Sort of. Well, I kind of did. I'd got one, and it's just funny how it works out. I got one from the guys at the Bass Tank, and then which are out in Oklahoma. And then they sent me one, and then was rigging it up, trying to get it all set up. And then we had like a problem with that. I put it actually on the championship for Russell, the Bassmaster Championship that spring. Finally got it all set up in time for that event, you know. And then I went out one day, turned it on. It just wouldn't power on. I don't know what happened. It was powering on when we at the house, right? So why did it not power on? So it's actually a funny story. So it didn't work. And then the other problem, I was with Motor Guide at the time. Motor Guide, I ordered that biggest troll motor they have, the one that's like the most powerful, the most 36 volt, most powerful, 109 pound thrust, you know, true cable steer. But it also had the remote control steer. Well, they sent me the wrong one. They sent me the Tour, not the Tour Pro. And because they didn't realize anyone's crazy enough to put that on a kayak, let alone just the Tour. I'm like, no, no, no. I want like the Tour Pro. And because I was putting on a solo skiff, which is, you know, legal in these tournaments. So
you're trying to race the John boats.
I was trying to, yeah, basically I was trying to, but the problem was they gave me a Tour Pro and I didn't realize when I put it on the solo skiff and I realized this is not the right one. Cause where's the remote to control it? And if you don't have the remote to control it, you can only go as far back as the foot pedal will reach. Well, I'm kind of still on the bow of the boat. And when you got something that goes that fast and your weight's on the bow using the foot pedal, it plows. So I don't have my motor and I don't have my live scope because live scope didn't turn on and I can't even use that boat, which was, you know, I got my Scholey, my Crescent Scholey for the, like the throw and go rivers and creeks. And that boat was supposed to be my electronics, bigger water, big lake focused boat. Well, after that tournament, you know, I went to the river and you obviously heard what happened in the river. So I had a chance. But then after that tournament, it's already like the next tournament's probably in April. And shallow water stuff is happening where I'm like, I don't need that stuff. And then from that point on, I went on to, as you know, have this.
Oh, that was the 2022 year. Yeah. Where you won everything.
I won like all a bunch of tournaments.
You KBF, you won three with Bass.
Yeah. It was nuts. The last three Bass.
Why would you pick up forward facing again?
So why would I ever pick it up again? I'm like, this is working, man. Like I'm not going to stop until, and it was a blessing in disguise that it all just wasn't working that day that I was trying to like learn it. Cause you know, if I would have turned it on and see and started going with it and the motor guy would have been the right one where I could use the lanyard by, you know, sitting back in the seat and not plowing water, I would have probably been sucked in. And I'm not saying I wouldn't have had success and, but it would have changed that whole year and everything I did and all the places I fished. I would have not done the backwaters, river creek kind of deal, you know. Not that every tournament was won that way, but you know, like I said, Grand was main lake, you know, spawning pocket. Right. But anyway, it's definitely interesting how things work. And ever since then, I've just stuck with it, and until I guess it doesn't work, I'll you know,
okay,
stick doing this. So but I am interested kinda, in it.
Yeah, we're kind of in the same boat. Yeah. I feel like it's what you do. Obviously, you're better at it than I am. As all of that hardware behind you would show, but that sort of shallow backwater fishing, like we both kind of like doing the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is, as long as I'm still able to do well with it, you know, I want to keep doing it. It's my favorite way to fish, but I've had enough tournaments now where I see what guys are able to do with it. And, you know, Jake, Kukulis had a great tournament, wasn't using it. I think he was using side scan if I remember right. But you know, not using forward facing, but a lot of the other top guys were.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, I thought it was awesome that he was able to do it without it, but I feel like it's something that, you know, anymore, you watch what's happening with the elites and the, at least over the first two events, and it's a long season, stuff could change, but I know my fantasy team is not looking the way that, or at least I'm not looking as good in the standings as I would have thought. You know, I went with a lot of, you know, I'm mixed, you know, some scopers, but I also picked a lot of veteran guys. And there's definitely a difference that the live scope guys are, I cannot believe what some of the boat guys are able to do with it, following an individual fish for 15 minutes and just continuing to try different things and eventually trick it. It's,
it is wild, man.
I think it's the future.
It's definitely taking over, and it's just more and more people are getting it now and are learning it, and you got the youth that are really good at it, obviously. So it's gonna be, you're gonna find a way at every tournament to win. Someone's gonna win on Grand Lake using it, most likely, because I mean, unless they're up like, you know, maybe one of the rivers just kind of doing old school stuff, maybe they don't need it there. But even still, a lot of the stuff that settles, that wood and timber, even like in the river arm that no one really can see anymore because it's submerged, you got to scope that pretty much. So it's like, the thing is right now, what's changing the game is, it, what's scary to me is the fact that you see Scott Martin on Okeechobee perspective mode, fishing bedding fish without seeing bedding fish. So if it's muddy or cloudy and they're spawning, it's in the spawning season, muddy and cloudy, and you can't see them with your sunglasses, doesn't matter. You can always see them. If it's clear, bluebird sky and sunny, you can use your sunglasses and just
original
life. That's right. But it's now dominating on, like I said earlier, like, oh, it was already spring, right? And they were going shallow and I could do all my tactics, right? Well, in bass boat world, you can't go to the places that we can get in kayaks, right? So it's going to dominate even more in their worlds, right? Because once the fish go shallow, doesn't matter what the conditions, water clarity, temperature, whatever, if they're just up there spawning, if they're locked on or even close and staging, perspective mode is just going to see them all. And you're just going to be able to like pick them out. Oh, 2 o'clock, there's one. It's, you know, it's really not, it definitely takes a lot of that mystery out of it. So it's scary to me that it's now found a home in springtime spawning time.
Yeah,
as well. So now it's like, well, when is it not going to ever be effective? It's great in the fall, in the winter, in this early spring, now during the spawn too, like it's going to be a player, and you might have an outlier, someone really good, like a John Cox or Keith Boucher or someone that it lets, you know, Jake, you're saying Kukuyas, there might be an outlier in the top 10 that or top five that cast a check. But if you actually took the whole field, let's say that like the Elite Series has an entire field, well, not an entire field, but let's say 70% of them now probably have it and use it. They're pretty good with it, you know, or 50%, whatever it is. I don't know. But like the majority of those anglers, yeah, I think it's big, like say 70% at least that let's say they understand it and use it and understand it. There's probably other like pretty much everyone has it, but there's like 30% that don't really either use it or understand it really, but there's 70. But the point is you might have one of those 30% guys that are in that top. You might say, yeah, it can still be done, but that's BS. If you look at the whole standings,
yeah, percentage wise,
your odds are not good. It's not good, guys. It's not good. But I love it. I don't mind it. I love LiveScope. I think it's cool. I think it's exciting. I don't hate LiveScope, and just because I don't use it doesn't mean you have to hate it. I think it's more that if LiveScope, my whole take has always been if LiveScope is legal, then why in the world or how in the world could a tunnel hole or a jet drive or just a polling platform, like 2 foot high polling platform, like a short one, like you're on a skiff, you know, that or an A-rig. How come those things, which are even added up all together, still would never be as effective as LiveScope? So why in the world are those not legal when this technology, which is this dominant, is? That's the bigger question to me. It's not LiveScope the problem. It's that the other stuff should now also be legal to bring the pendulum back a little bit for the guys who want to fish in that style as well. Because it's all the same water. The bass move in and out, and let's let some people go a little bit further than they usually could up in a backwater river or creek or something, you know?
It's fun watching Poche with that winch get into some places and jump over beaver dams and stuff. But the other thing that I think it was Bass After Dark. I was listening to, I think it was Alton Jones Jr. that was bringing up the point of how he's able to use it in shallow water. And I don't even think he was talking about spawning situations, just being able to go around docks and see them. And I think that'll be an interesting, like, I'm curious to see if, you know, when I get it, if I can actually apply it to some of the shallow water situations where you go to some place like a Hartwell or Smith Mountain Lake near me with a bajillion docks, and you just, you know, you don't stop on the ones where you don't see fish. Like, it could make it really efficient, and you still kind of get to fish, you know, that old school techniques.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to see, you know, what I can do with it once I do get it.
Yeah. It'll be exciting. I mean, there's no doubt I would scan. I would, like, you and I have fished enough. We know I will not be, I don't think I'll be super surprised. You know what I mean? When I go to a spot using my own intuition where I would go to catch fish right now, I don't think I'm going to be like shocked when I scan it and be like, there's fish here. Cause yeah, I would normally just fish it and I would catch fish there. So I would catch them, but it's a little bit, because to me, I'm always fishing like you, like a lot of real, just thick junk, like just backwater where there's a ton of cover and places for these fish to hide. So I don't even know. LiveScope can't pick it all up. They can't pick up a fish if he's so tight to the bottom or so tight on that cypress tree or those boulders or that lay down, that root ball. To me, I'm still just going to fish it, because I think the LiveScope's not, it's lying, or it's not lying. It's just, it can't see what I already know is freaking in that root ball. I know there's a big bass there in that lay down. Now I'm going to catch it, even though it can't read it. So it's interesting that the biggest other issue to me is just the fact that if they ban, you know, the A-rig and other things, like the A-rig, let's say, like, cause it was going to like dominate too much. And now of course we know it didn't and it won't. It definitely could still be a player. It's catches fish, but the fish get used to it. And there's certain times of the year it really plays and then it fades, you know, just like a frog, you know, topwater frog plays certain times of year in certain places than it does in others. But it wouldn't dominate the way they thought, which would make the sport boring, because if it's all just won by this one thing, well, every week we know, okay, it's gonna be a rig on where is the bridge? Is it a bridge? Is it by the dam on the riprap? Like, where's it gonna get one on the a rig this time? That's what we thought, but we know now it didn't happen. But now it's just funny to me that we have this technology and that's what happened. We know now the tournaments will be won on LiveScope. Most likely, it's not much of a surprise anymore. But just where exactly it's going to get one, we don't know. But to me, it's what we're trying to avoid with the A-Rig, but we're allowing that. So that's kind of like, but we're allowing it. And that's just interesting to me. And the other thing is sports to be good and successful and profitable, the best sports on the planet are always, there's two things, good on TV. They found a way to be really good on TV. And this does not make it good on TV. You know what I mean? That is the opposite. It makes it worse for TV, not better. Now, I won't say worse. But if you made the rules where you could use a tunnel hole or a jet drive or have a pulling platform or other and allow the A-Rig, I think you would probably see a little bit more variety in the viewership in the show rather than the same staring at a screen kind of like views we get a lot these days that kind of make it a little bit more boring to watch. You'd at least see some of the other stuff playing. But so if they could – but what I think actually makes it on the same – token, it makes it good for TV because you are seeing more fish catches. So there's a positive because you're getting more fish catches, more big fish. But the act of seeing those aren't as entertaining as the other kind of like up in the junk kind of fish catches. So if we could just make some rules to let them have the shallow water guys have a little bit of like a little bit back, you know, to where they could even be competitive again, then our viewership would be cool because it'd be like, oh, LiveScope here. And then Poche or John Cox or whoever, Keith Carson, backwater over here, you know, Bill Lowe and who, like that's to me would be like the best mix of having them both. But because, you know, a lot of people definitely, me included, got into fishing to, it was the opposite, you know, back when I in the 80s, 90s, when I grew up, it was like, come on, get outside, guys, quit watching TV. Let's get you outside. Let's go fish. Let's see God's beautiful creation and stay away from screens and fall in love with nature and the outdoors. And this is just sucking us right back down to a screen, which you and I are talking through one. I'm on this all the time. Now, you know, like when I go out, I'm on all of us looking down at the screens fishing now. So it's like,
we're submitting our fish on the screen. Taking selfies with the screen.
I just think the rules.
It's a different world.
Get steered back a little bit where the shallow water backwater guys have a way to, you know, compete again, you know, and then that would still keep that overall, the original intent of bass fishing, the activity, you know, and the sport. What we loved about it is we're getting outside in the fresh air and the animals and just look up and all this beautiful stuff. And that's why I think it irks a lot of people. It's taken away from that original like point of being outside and fishing, which was, no,
I think the mystery is part of it too. I was thinking about the other day because I don't hate it. I mean, there's definitely guys that are out there that just, you know, it's the devil. We can't have it. But I think that mystery, it's probably guys like me that don't have it, that don't really understand it to begin with. They have an idea of what it is. I know having never used it, I've only seen it. I've talked to people that use it. Yeah. So I don't even know if it's fair for me to really have an opinion on it. But the thing that I could see people, you know, the sort of anticipation, you know, you never know when the bite's going to come.
I
think anyway, that a little bit of that is gone with the, like kind of that mystery, like kind of trying to think what the fish is doing, but you don't really know. Well, if you're looking on a screen, you kind of take that mystery away. It's like, I know which dot. Well, I'm not going to stop on that or that dot. I'm going to go fish that dock. So I don't know. It's only
going to get better too. That's the thing. That's the scary part. Like golf is rolling the golf ball back in 2026. They announce it now so people can start to prepare. So golf ball manufacturers can start to conform to the restraints that they've set. So
you can't hit it as far.
Yeah. So it's taken. So think about our example about being outside and nature, the mystery, everything you're talking about. I'm talking about why we love fishing. Originally, what started the sport, what created the sport and made it so exciting is kind of gone a little bit. And that's okay. But at some point, the golf ball started to go too far. And the original intent of the original golf course and where they put those bunkers in the fairway and all that was the same thing. It's all gone now. That you don't have to worry about those bunkers because they're only at 275. Well, you can throw it in the air easily, a pro can 300 yards these days. So it's taken it all away. The original point of the strategy of the sport, what made it fun when it was just an activity and not even a sport, is all of a sudden now gone because of the golf ball and because of the strength training. Tiger Woods kind of brought that into the world, you know, with how, you know, people are just intense about strength training now, even in golf, right? Like other sports, but that plus the golf club technology and the golf ball technology, it's like, it all is like, kind of like LiveScope is for our sport. It just took away the original intent of the game. And that's where I feel like people are kind of having this little pushback. It's like, this wasn't the original intent. Like, I think people, you know, who start, a lot of the guys who started this would be like, you know, rolling over, you know, obviously a lot of them are still alive now and they probably don't love to see it, of course, because this isn't like the original intent of why they fell in love with the sport and what made it so cool and fun. But we can still correct that, can restrict it now, because my fear is, what I'm most scared about is, if you don't stop it, where do you draw the line? Because eventually it's going to be so good that it's just live. It's like, you think about it, it's just going to be like a, almost like a camera. It's so good. You're gonna be able to see what a bass is and probably be able to turn colors on which ones are bass. They'll be able to tell by some ping or somehow which is a bass, which is a crappie, turn them into colors. You can point them out. It's just going to get better and better to where it's basically just a camera. At what point does it stop? When does it stop to where they're like, there's a little bit of mystery now. Like you're saying, it's a dot. You don't know if it's crappie, if it's a bass, if it's a, whatever it is, it's a carp, you're chasing it. It's going to get better where that's even gone and you know what it is. And now you're just trying to figure out, well, how do I trigger it to bite? And then, so you got to, if golf's rolling the ball back, we got to figure a way to do that with this, so it doesn't change that original intent of the sport. And rules of sports are meant to actually keep the sport, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
If you took away the pass in football, well, the sport's no longer football. It's rugby. Basically, it's just a running play every time, pretty much. And some kicks. You know, so or else,
there's another example of a game that's changed a lot too, though, is, I mean, football, you almost can't even compare stats from big quarterbacks from, you know, 50 years ago to now, because the game was played so differently. It's, I think stuff's always going to evolve to a point, and it's just, there's some disagreement over where, you know, kind of where it should fall, kind of where the, what the sport is, where it should be. I think the cool thing, though, is that for the guys that want to have the technology, they can go out there and have it. And the guys that don't, hey, I can still go catch fish the same way I've done it for, you know, my whole life. Right. If I choose to, I'm probably not going to do very well in tournaments, but I can still have
fun. Do it. Yeah. Think about it too. I was going to say, back when Tiger Woods was getting like golfers weren't really working out and he started doing that. It wasn't the golf ball and the club that all the other guys had the same golf balls and clubs. It was his workout, his work ethic and just to train. I can like stomach that. If I got outworked and out-trained, all the other golfers are like, well, I need to do that. I got to step up my game. It's hard for these bass pros who've done it all one way to stomach the fact that these guys didn't do a whole lot of, it's like just a quick piece of technology. It's all of a sudden like, boom, now I see the fish, here they are. Where the other guys were working hard training to, in understanding the fish over the course of their whole careers on, you know, where to learn those, where the fish going to be because of what I've learned, my intuition and education. And all of a sudden now these guys come over here and it's like, you can just go along the bank and just eventually if 3-4 days of practice, you're going to see the right fish and stumble onto them. Even if you had no clue why you should be there. Like it's, you know, the old pros are like, well, I know it's the water clarity is this, the temperature's this, it's got this vegetation, blah, blah, blah. I know why I was led to there. And now you don't really have to know why. You can just put it down and go and just until you find them. And it's not like it just was like a shortcut. It feels like the best example, Andy Morgan said it on his Instagram the other day, was he using a gazetteer, the Atlas of maps, right? Road maps. So one of the books, you just have to find your way before there was GPS, you know, GPSs and phones. And he had to like find his way to places, you know? And then all of a sudden it just made life simpler. All of a sudden now he's just looking at the GPS, just driving and looking. He can do other stuff. He's just driving and looking where it goes. It just made it that much simpler like that. And that's what it is. Mm. It's like they were learning all this stuff, working hard, using the Atlas or the map, right? The road maps. And all of a sudden these guys just came in, these young guys. And all of a sudden they already have the GPS, you know, Garmin GPS or their Google Maps on their phone, it just all of a sudden, just boom, that's simple. They don't even know why or how they're taking a left or right at this road or that road going east or west. That they don't need to even think about it anymore. They're just seeing the fish. And then now they just got to figure out. Yeah.
The other thing that I've noticed, like just listening to different guys talk, some of these up and comers, like the rookie class, especially on the Elite Series this year, those guys put in a lot of time.
Yes.
So it's, they have the tools and maybe they're picking up on the tools, adopting them quicker than some of the veterans, you know, some of the guys that are more like our age. But they are putting in a ton of time. Like they're fishing more, like more than I don't even know how to like talking like 300 days a year. Like
it's
like
crazy
what guides are doing, and they're not restricted to, you know, they're not out there trying to help teach somebody else. They're just learning and going. Learning. And that is, it's amazing, insane, to me. Like that's work. Like that's earning it.
It is. That like is work, man.
They're young, but if you calculate the amount of time that they spend, like versus the average fisherman, they're old in the fishing world, like in terms of fishing hours, which is, it's kind of cool. It's like, I look at, you know, Trey McKinney and some of these other guys, and I'm like, man, how is he that good? And it's like, well, he's lived and breathed this like on a whole different level from what I did when I was that age. Like it's
true.
It's impressive what these guys are doing. But yeah, I want to shift a little bit to the forward facing. So for the guys that don't have it, for the guys that are going to go old school, you know, and maybe this is too broad of a question, but what's kind of your go-to? What are this time of year, spring, what's your approach? What are you looking for? Maybe baits or technique wise, or is that, like I said, is it too broad a question? Is it fishery dependent?
Yeah. I mean, obviously what I think we're going to find out with this live scope, actually, because it helps us learn, right? I think we're going to find out that fish spawn on a bell curve, right? Like, so some of them are going to spawn earlier than others, but there is going to be the bigger wave. But what's crazy is, you can still probably pull off at any point in the year during the spawn, let's say, and still catch fish offshore somewhere with that technology. But because there's, you know, obviously those are already pre-spawned and there's other ones spawning, whatever. And then post-spawn. So afterwards, it'll be enough of them will be out there in every stage. So what's crazy is to see how that's going to change thing and still be one out there. But if it's me, and now obviously we're getting into where they're coming up shallow and it's this time of year, we're starting to get there. I'm definitely going to find the warmest water I can, because I want to catch them shallow. So we need to be in the warmest water, because they don't really get shallow until it gets warm enough. And so I'm going to look for some of the warmer water, because it's cool, because you know how you guys, or not you guys, us as humans, we know if we go over to the shade tree and it's 100 degrees outside, but we go under the shade tree, it's going to feel like 90. Mm-hmm. We are not over there at the shade tree. We're 100 yards from it. We see shade. We know it's cooler. Well, bass, you know, we don't think about them like this. We just think they stay deep and it's cold, but they know when the sun comes out and it's warm, even though they can't feel it as well down where they are, they know, okay, if I go super shallow right now and I get through this thermocline and this really cold water, but I get up to the 2 foot of water that's getting baked first, I'm going to get to where I want to be, where it's going to feel better. I'll feel more comfortable. And when they feel more comfortable and feel better, they're cold blooded. So they're actually more likely to feed, because their metabolisms are kind of bumping up. Right. So it's actually a win for our styles, right? We want to be shallow. So I'm going to look for these fish. I mean, I've seen fish in the middle of the winter. They were like in 6 inches of water because it was a warm day in the middle of the winter. And they got so warm on the sunny and the right bank, that fish zipped up from wherever he was down deep. Once it became daytime, you know, and it probably 10, 11 o'clock, and it started to warm up shallow and was sitting in 6 inches of water. It was like, whoa, that's crazy. So he was up like there.
Just under the surface.
Just around some matted leaves that were kind of attracting some heat. So I'm going to try to find a population of fish in a pattern I can figure out, you know, for this tournament, for example, we're going to, that's shallow, you know, and just see if I get lucky and can stumble on some fish that are already moving up that shallow. And I think that'll be doable, because a lot of fish will be moving shallow given how, you know, the weather's been pretty warm, unseasonably warm over there. I think we're going to be in good shape with that. But,
yeah,
so I would use chatterbaits and spinner baits, buzz baits. I mean, stuff that I love to do, swim baits, all some of my favorites, just moving bait, just kind of as fast as I can, just covering water until I stumble across some. And if they're not into biting, you know, my bait that, you know, on the first couple casts in that target, I just move on and somebody else can try to figure them out with live scope, how, if they see them and how to get them to make a bite, because I'm just focused on the fish that are aggressive and feeding. And if they're not, I don't have time for them. I'll be moving on to other targets that I can.
So you're definitely targeting, at least when you can, as a preference, you're targeting those high percentage, you know, you're throwing those moving baits and just looking for the aggressive ones. More cast means, you know, more opportunities, more presentations in front of more fish.
Yep.
And that's going to translate to more bites. I like it.
Yep. And then a jig is good too this time of year. I mean, that's how I won Grand Lake, was that jig with crawfish trailer.
I thought you had thrown a spinnerbait or mentioned a spinnerbait a little bit, but then I thought you actually caught them in the event with a jig.
I did. They were spawning. They were like they were locked in the area pretty good. So I knew they were there. So I slowed down a little bit, but I was still working it pretty quick. You know what I mean? But for me, but still contacting the bottom. But yeah, hopefully we can find the right depth range. If they're 5 foot on 45 degree banks, if they're in, you know what I mean, like 2 foot on some flats, you know, they'll warm up a little bit more. Maybe, I mean, maybe we just got to figure out our shallow water thing that we can kind of like pattern and then go with it. So that's my strategy. But I love what we do. I think it's cool. It is the original thing I love about fishing in general. And maybe what's made LiveScope also difficult to stomach is we're not spending a lot of money. It's simple. It's still just, it's as close to soccer as you can get in terms of fishing. You know what I mean? Like just simple, just about, yeah, basically. And that's the other thing about sports, you know, obviously you can keep them always to be successful. You can keep them as close, you know, as easy, lower cost of entry, right? The easier barrier of entry, which is money, you know, for most of us, then that's better. And I think kayak fishing's done that. And that's what's cool about kayak fishing. And we can still get to some places that, you know, forward facing sonar may not be such a big player, and you can still have a chance in kayak fishing. So if Bass Boat World, that's the thing about the elites and all that with forward facing, that I think is going to be tricky too, is just they got to understand that some kids out there doesn't have the money for forward facing sonar. He can't learn. He'll never learn it. You have to have it to win now. We've seen that. So he'll never be able to learn it because he never got the money for it. But soccer, the biggest sport of all around the world, anybody from anywhere can still rise to the top. You can play on the playground, get good in school. You got to pay to play in some leagues and stuff like that. But it's not like they're asking you to spend $130,000, $150,000, or even let's just say $20,000 or $30,000 for a good live scope setup these days with multiple screens and all that that you need to win. That's going to be the trickiest part, is how it's becoming like F1 racing and polo. Like these are the sports that are, it's bass fishing right there. It's like F1, polo, bass fishing. Like in terms of the money you need to like actually think you're going to have a chance to win, because you see what's winning is that technology. Well, the technology costs a lot of money. So anyway, but I like what we do, man. And I'm glad you kind of brought it back to this to end the show, because it's what got me in the sport, because I never had a lot of money. And I love getting up in, you know, skiddy and shallow water and just beating the banks. We'll see what happens.
Same here. It's definitely what I enjoy doing. I love seeing those. I don't know, something about catching a fish out of really shallow water, almost places where they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Like where you wouldn't even think they could get in it. It's so shallow. Like that is it's really cool. Intriguing to me. And then just the, you know, seeing the strikes, and
I love
that aspect. And that's really I think you touched on it earlier, like why I got into the kayak fishing specifically is, you know, it was cheaper. There was less stuff I had to worry. I didn't have to worry about, you know, hauling those big lead acid batteries into my little plastic John boat. Is, you know, I could get into little backwater places quickly and quietly. And I feel like I grew a lot as a fisherman after work, an hour here, an hour there, 2 hours there, where I didn't have a whole day, but with my kayak, I could get out there and still like try to figure something out. And I think that's a cool aspect of the sport. I don't think it's ever going away either. I think that there's a ton of people that, you know, for that want to get into the sport and can, you know, kayaks, it's a great way to do it inexpensively. And the guys that want to, you know, invest more, spend more, whether it's, you know, the latest and greatest electronics or a bass boat or or whatever. There's guys that, you know, that could choose to take it to that level. And there's guys that can do it, you know, simply. And yeah. I'm trying to take, especially like as I, you know, I know this year I'm not going to have as much practice time as I've had maybe in the past. And it's like, I'm trying to just look at it, like go out and have fun. And, you know, some of the, and I don't want to go too far down a rabbit hole. I know I've kept you too long already, but some of the best tournaments I've had is where I've, maybe the practice isn't good and I just wing it and go someplace I've never been before and yep. just fish. And I don't have these preconceived notions or, oh, there should be one on that tree because there was yesterday. Or mm-hmm. you just kind of let the day develop and you get in kind of a flow state almost. And just like,
that's true.
I'm going to try and do some of that this year. And I've another buddy, former guest of the show, Dave Shields. I've, you know, talked to him, picked his brain a little bit. He's done really well the last two trips to Florida, and his style is just really simple. It's kind of like our style. And I simpler than mine even. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to learn the technology at some point, but for now I'm also trying to keep it very simple.
Oh yeah. I do like Florida, how you don't have to use, I mean, obviously it plays down there, but there's so much shallow water and vegetation and places that the technology just can't see the fish. If you know, you're not using it punching, right? So I do love Florida. That's one of the places that's probably going to, you know, level the playing field a little bit. But then there's obviously parts of Florida where, like Scott Martin was seeing him on the bed with
sight fishing on Okeechobee.
The technology. But like you said, man, it the shallow water, the top water strikes, what we do, it's really, really cool and why we love it. And not that you can't do that with the technology, but you know, but essentially watching it is, it just, man, it's what got you hooked. You know, it's like some of the highest ratings for Bassmasters probably tournaments is probably like lacrosse, you know what I mean? Places like that, because it is a visual show. It's all shallow water, a lot of frogging, a lot of just incredible eats. So that's kind of what you and I love to do all the time, everywhere. We look for that. We look for somewhere that's like lacrosse. We can catch them shallow, you know, almost on dry land, and you get the coolest bites, the coolest strikes, and just the coolest fish catches. And
I know it hurts me too at times. Like I know that.
Oh yeah, it hurts us.
That frog, you know, it, certain times it's not the right thing to throw, or that buzz bait or whatever it is. But I'm like, that's how I want to catch them. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick up that buzz. I'm going to throw all day long. And
exactly.
I don't know. To me, I'm really going to try and focus on having fun this year, and we'll see what happens in terms of standings and everything. But
well, I'm looking forward to it, man. I'll see you there. Yeah. When do you head out to that event? You said,
I'm going to start to drive on Friday, and then I think I'll end up getting there hopefully early, maybe midday Saturday. We'll see what happens.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm going to leave Friday and get there as soon as I can, you know, and stay somewhere Friday night and then get there as soon as I can on Saturday. Probably won't get on the water, just get unloaded that day and get set up. And I'll give me what, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday? Yeah. Give me 3 days to at least try to explore. So we'll see what happens. And yeah, man, you guys have me on anytime. You know, I kept myself, trust me. I know I filibuster and talk like crazy. So I've kept myself. You didn't keep me at all. And just thanks for bearing with me on getting some of that information out. And thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. And just passionate about the sport like you guys. Have me on anytime. Anytime, man.
Well, I'll take you up on that. Yep. Thanks again. And ladies and gentlemen, Drew Gregory.
All right.
Well, we reached the part of the show that we do every week, recognizing anglers who have done impressive things in the world of kayak fishing, whether it's on social media, cool fish catch, tournament. And I would be remiss if I did not recognize the guys from the Hobie event this past week. We talked about it at the onset of the show, but I got to give Mr. Abby Abendanza the first spot this week. He's going to be our first king of the week. Very impressive finish. I believe it's his first national win. I'm not 100% sure on that, but whether it is or not, very impressive win. I messed up the math earlier. I said Joe had 175 inches. He had 177 and a half. So it was a 8-inch difference, if I'm doing the math right. So Abby won by an 8-inch margin, which is impressive. It's hard to do, especially on a fishery where if you look down in the standings, it's so tight. So congrats to Abby. Impressive showing. And then, you know, second king, I wanted to recognize, you know, maybe I'm not being particularly original or creative, but I'm going to recognize the runner up in the tournament, Mr. Joe McElroy. I was listening to Joe on the KBN podcast, talking about his season and kind of going into the event. He mentioned he had a tough year. You know, his confidence was a little shot. I don't remember the exact way that he worded it, but he was talking about, you know, he'd struggled, and it humbles you. And he went into this tournament with an approach of just wanting to have fun, not, you know, catch some fish, not get too worked up about the standings and stressed about, oh, I got to have a good showing. It paid off for him big time. Great finish. Fantastic. Anytime you can take home hardware and a nice big check. So congrats to Joe on righting the ship and turning his season around. So Abby, Joe, congrats to our Kayak Kings of the Week for this week. And that's going to do it for the show this week. Thank you for tuning into this edition of Kayak Fishing Weekly on the Serious Angler Podcast Network. If you like the show, check back with us next week. We'll have some more kayak fishing conversation, and we'll see you then.
Hey guys, appreciate you listening to that episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If your application that you're listening to this episode on allows it, please give us a rating and review. It helps us out big time, get shown more on the platform that you're listening to, and it helps us grow the show. And if you get some time, check out the other podcasts on the Serious Angler Network. And of course, have a great day.